Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Attention, collectors of vinyl. Have you ever gone into a record store and felt overwhelmed by all the unfamiliar options? Are you frustrated by the constantly increasing prices of classic rock staples? Do you avoid streaming music or long for the days when music was recommended to you by a friend instead of an algorithm? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then check out I'd Buy That for a Dollar, a podcast about inexpensive, common, and underappreciated records that are waiting to be rediscovered. Each week, hosts Sean, Jeremy, and Peter discuss an album and the artist's history. Previous episodes include selections by The Isley Brothers, The Carpenters, The Doobie Brothers, and Donna Summer, among others. Become a bargain bin pro and impress all your friends with cool music trivia. Listen to I'd Buy That for a Dollar wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, my name's Adam from Toronto, Ontario, and I subscribe to the Creative Control Patreon because I feel that at the end of the day, there are very few people in the industry who are able to consistently get the kind of quality interviews out of very diverse subjects of many creative stripes and disciplines, as Vish does pretty well on every episode of the podcast. It's a no-brainer to me that I want to support this when you factor that in to all of the bonus content you get on Patreon. And, you know, it's a listener-supported podcast, so I want to keep the great content coming. So that's why you should also support Creative Control on Patreon.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today.
Owen Pallett is a multi-talented musician and songwriter who has long been an integral part of Toronto's arts community. A composer of the highest order, Pallett won the inaugural Polaris Music Prize for his album Heap Who's Clouds, has written string arrangements for works that have earned him Grammy and Oscar nominations, and a short list of his collaborators and clients includes Frank Ocean, Arcade Fire, The Mountain Goats, Pet Shop Boys, Beirut, Fucked Up, R.E.M., Duran Duran, Picastro, Grizzly Bear, Gentleman Reg, and Jim Guthrie, among many, many others. His latest album is called Island, and it's a masterful addition to his Spectrum series, featuring a recurring character named Lewis, who is something of an avatar for Pallett himself. Island is available worldwide via Domino Records and in Canada on Secret City, and so Owen and I had a chat about this album on the day that civil unrest against brutalizing police forces in America really began in earnest, in response to a Minneapolis police officer named Derek Chauvin murdering a black man named George Floyd in broad daylight. After addressing our personal feelings about this horrific incident and the police violence it spawned, Owen and I went on to discuss the origins and making of Island, why staying in touch with our exes might actually be okay, leaving external perceptions behind, future plans, and more. a part of the Entertainment One Network with the support of listeners like you who follow and subscribe to this podcast and spread the word about it, and make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol, and Massey Hall's concert film series live at masseyhall.com, where you can stream dozens of 30-minute films for free, including performances by past and even super current podcast guests like Owen Pallett, plus in-kind support from Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton. This is the 545th episode of Creative Control, featuring the brilliant Owen Pallett, with your host, me, Vish Khanna. How's it going?
I'm quite well. Hi, Vish.
How are things? Things are okay there in Toronto with the pandemic and everything? Are you hanging in there?
Pandemic's okay, but I actually kind of had a solipsistic few days where I wasn't really paying attention to the news. And yeah, I just read the news today about what was going on in Minneapolis and had a pretty rough morning about it.
It is awful. What in particular has caused you to feel distraught? I only ask particularly because if you do pay attention to the news, we are so inundated with bad news and bad news of this sort that there's a danger of becoming a little numb. But you were clearly shaken by something specifically to do with this situation. What was it?
Well, I just watched the video of the murder of that black man in Minneapolis, and it really messed me up. I mean, I don't actually actively seek that stuff out, but people were talking about it in a group chat, and I thought, oh, it's like, oh, you know, it's okay. I'll watch this. I want to see what the big deal is. And it actually shook me, and I was in shock for hours afterwards, and was reading about it and did feel, you know, surprising new feelings, like I was feeling violent rage. And I was reading about it online, and that this was actually a reaction that school children had when they saw a video of Rodney King was violent rage. They broke the television after seeing it. Like, I mean, it's kind of this is not just bad news. This is something very, very, very different, very awful.
I would agree with you. Is there something, have you had similar reactions to other such videos, or do you normally avoid watching them? Because I did not watch this one. I can't. There's too much for me. I don't want to turn a blind eye to this, but there's just so much bad news and horrific news and abuses of power that I have to sort of step back every once in a while. And so do you normally try to, in trying to stay informed, we try to watch things like this, I think.
No, I don't. I actually avoid this kind of thing. And I think the real pain I was feeling today was just that I felt an urge to comfort certain of my black friends, and I didn't even know what to say to them. I didn't know how to approach them or what words to offer. I just felt completely speechless, and so it's been a bit of a struggle today, just trying to make sense of it and trying to figure out what to do, because I don't even feel like I can bring myself to say anything to anyone.
The people you did speak with about this, what did they say back to you?
I didn't end up speaking with anyone.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. There was a comment on Twitter about this situation. There's been a few interesting comments about this, and among them were by at least one African-American woman suggested, you know, you don't have to spread this video everywhere, because when a white person dies, you don't do that. You only seem to do it when black people die, horrific deaths, which is just further traumatizing us. What do you make of that? Like, I'm trying to balance this emotional, visceral reaction you're experiencing and a lot of us experience with news and information and not turning a blind eye to injustice, it's a slippery slope. It's a difficult balancing act. What do you make of a comment like that one?
I mean, I couldn't possibly imagine what it must be like to have a video like that circulating and be in a black body. I can't imagine how horrible that must be. And it's not up to me to state like whether these videos should be spread around or not. You know what I mean? I remember, you know, the justification that Emmett Till's mother had for publishing photos of his face, you know, and how important it was at that time. At this point, it's just like, it just feels like you said, re-traumatizing. Like the problem is, the problem is not just the violence itself, but it's not an official term, but it's widely used as the CPTSD that, you know, people just suffer from, black people just must suffer from or may suffer from as a result of the dissemination of these images. And yeah, I feel so incredibly helpless and so much love and desire to just to comfort people, but not even an inkling of, aside from just sending money. I have no idea, you know, what even to say. I don't even know what to say to you about it right now. It's so shocking.
Yeah. No, I appreciate you broaching it. You do live in Toronto. It is an epicenter of black violence in Canada. Is it difficult living there under these conditions in this circumstance?
Difficult for me, no. You know, it's obviously not. Like, I'm not... My body is not under threat. I have friends that I am concerned about, friends that I worry about, and not just like the safety of their bodies, but the effects of being in this environment. And again, this feeling of helplessness, like I wish I knew how better to support them and to help.
Yeah, I think we all do, and it gets difficult to not offer simple platitudes. Like, there's not a lot. Yeah, I'm not sure what to say or do, except to offer support in forums like this one and to talk about these things. Like I say, we can't let these things go. We need to keep people accountable and institutions accountable. But it's just every week there is something like this, and it's difficult. I appreciate that you've had an emotional response to it. It seems to me that suggests you are engaged with these issues, and you're not turning a blind eye to it. So that says something about you, doesn't it?
I'm not taking this moment to derive any sort of sense of self-satisfaction.
Right, of course. Right.
From my emotional response.
Right, okay. Fair enough. Well, on that note, thank you for making time during this difficult circumstance for you to speak with me about your music. And if I can segue out of this to say congratulations on Island, I'm going to do that. Owen, congratulations on Island.
Thank you so much. I don't really know what to say without sounding like a blowhard about it, but I'm just so pleased with it as a artistic statement. It's a very, very rare thing for me to feel satisfied with a product like this. And, you know, I had more often than not when I put out a record, I'm like, there's all this stuff I wish I'd done differently, you know, but not with this one. I really, really am so, so happy with it.
Now, it has been 6 years since your last proper album, correct? In Conflict?
Yeah, that's correct. My last one, it's been almost exactly 6 years. Came out May 14th, 2014, was in Conflict's release.
Wow. That's just a coincidence. I mean, you and I talked about briefly about this new album when you were on the Long Night talk show of mine when was that? November, I guess, or something like that. November. Yeah, it must have been November. I don't remember. But and you were saying like you'd had this record done a while, right?
Yeah, it's been done for 2 years.
2 years, okay. So really,
over 2 years now, it's been done. Yeah,
right. And I think we broached this before. The reason it didn't come out before now is mostly label kind of stuff, or was there other stuff going on that delayed the release?
It was a combination of mental health stuff that I was dealing with, and also some label stuff as well.
Okay.
It would just be like I wouldn't be ready, or then the label wouldn't be ready, and it got pushed back. Twice, maybe three times. I can't remember.
Okay. Well, yeah. Where I was going with this is, you say you are, for you, more or less completely satisfied with an album, which is rare. And where I was going with this is, well, it seems, at least publicly, like you may have taken more time than you usually do to make a record and fine-tune it, per se. By the way, I don't say this to disparage any of your previous output. I think you're being hard on yourself. Those of us who follow you know, would say, your records are all really stellar, so I know you can't be objective about it, but so within all that, what do you suppose it is about Island that does leave you feeling particularly satisfied with it, happy with it, maybe more so? It sounds like more so than some of your previous releases.
I had a very different approach with this record, actually, and it did not take long. Despite the long gap, it actually came very quickly, both in the writing, in the arrangement. It happened fast. There was only 2 days in studio to record the drums and piano, and I did all the guitar stuff in about a week. It just like came really quickly. The difference really was in just the way I wrote it, because previous records, I've constantly been wary of the fact that the reason why people know my name is because I do a live looping thing with a violin, and I have, over the past 15 years since I started doing that, I've tried to make sure that I'm making songs that are going to be beautiful to look at when I play them live, as well as compelling on record.
Hmm.
And with this album, I threw that schematic out the window and just started writing songs that I wanted to record with no concept of how thrilling they would be to see live.
So it doesn't sound like it was completely impulsive per se, but there was it sounds to me, based on what you're saying, and please correct me if I'm wrong, you were relying on instinct and impulses rather than overthinking per se or dwelling upon ideas. You were kind of letting first thoughts on some level have their say. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. I mean, the first song that I wrote for the record was Paragon of Order, and I wrote it so long ago, March 2015, if you can believe
it. Oh, wow.
And I was in Sydney, Australia. And I was doing a little tour there for this David Lynch show. It's kind of a strange thing put together by David Coulter. It was really, really great to meet the people on it. Kieran J. Callinan was on the tour, and Chiba Matto. But yeah, there was just a piano in my dressing room, and I just wrote what would become Paragon of Order. And it just was so nice to just kind of have written this song at the piano that I just continued to write songs at the piano, write songs at the guitar. Basically, it's so funny because I'm talking about it like it's a revelation, but all I'm describing is how every other person writes an album.
Well, to some extent. What was the David Lynch show you were working on?
It was a concert that was kind of a selection of different works that have been found in David Lynch movies over the years. And I myself don't have a particular specific affection for David Lynch as a filmmaker. I do like his movies. Mulholland Drive is really amazing to me.
It's haunting. Very haunting.
Yeah, it's a crazy, crazy good movie.
Yeah.
But he doesn't mean to me like, say, what Roy Anderson means to me, who's like a director who I adore. But, they asked me to come down and do it, and I really like David Coulter, so I decided I would go do it. And you can actually see on my Instagram, there's a video of me singing Falling, originally by Julie Cruz, and I sing it in the same range that she sings it in, so it's really high, and it's really cute.
Nice.
I think it's cute, but yeah, that's from like 5 years ago now.
Well, I brought up the Lynch thing because I noticed in Paragon of Order some allusions to what I believe are cinematic. At least I think they're cinematic allusions. Child of a broken home can love anyone, and the unblinking eye that keeps track of our shit It will look to the left when kids get lit. That all seems like my muscles softened since I washed up here. I don't know. There's something about surveillance and camera stuff going on in there that I'm picking up on. Am I on the right track, or so to speak?
Nope.
Good.
No,
this is good.
No, there is a cinematic reference in the song, and I will give you $20 next time I see you. And you have one guess to guess what line it is.
Okay. All right. I will. Okay. All right. I'll keep thinking about it. I do want to ask about this child of a broken home can love anyone line, because I feel like in various, there's a few parts of the record where it seems like you allude to this, being a child of a broken home. Your mother, or a mother anyway, is invoked frequently. Family stuff, being born. What do you suppose, if you could step back objectively and look at what I believe was instinctual writing in a lot of levels, do you have a sense of where and what you were where you were going and what maybe the record is, you know, quote unquote, about?
Certainly. Well, the thing is about these Spectrum records is that the character Lewis is going to have a lot of elements of his life that are autobiographical, just because that's kind of what I know the best is my own life. You know, I don't remember what author said it, but just said that all fiction is autobiography anyway. I think it was Nabokov. I don't remember.
It sounds like something Nabokov would say.
Yeah, it sounds like let's just give it to Nabokov. We'll steal it from Tolstoy, give it to Nabokov.
Sure.
Or we
could, that's the way it's done.
We could just say Russia, famous Russian proverb, unattributed Russian proverb. Anyways, so specifically that line, child of a broken home can love anyone, is like a direct reference to me and my life. I have sung about my parents before. I mean, I kind of got a little bit cheekily divulgent on my first album, Has a Good Home, on the song Furniture, because it's exaggerated, but I sing, my father had a dozen wives and a child by every one. It's not inaccurate, except it was only five wives, but my father's been married five times and has had children through many of them, and I have an incredibly large number of siblings.
Oh, I didn't. I feel like I vaguely did know that. But wow. Okay.
No. If I'm not going to tell you the number, but if I told you the number, you'd be like, what? Like, it sounds like the answer. People always are like, are your parents Irish Catholic? And I'm like, no, my father is a womanizing Protestant.
Well, I feel like I knew this maybe OTR. Maybe we didn't talk about it in an interview, but I feel like I vaguely knew this. But yeah, please. Is your father, you're from Milton, Ontario, right, originally?
No, I'm...
Oh, you're from Mississauga. Sorry, that's right. You're right. We talked about this. The Indian restaurants and... Right, so are your parents still... I know they're not together anymore, but are they still in that area?
My mother moved to Milton. My father moved to Toronto he lived all over the place. And I was splitting my time between the two parents, but they broke up when I was quite young, and they had perhaps one of the most acrimonious relationships that I've ever seen two parents having. And it was hard on me as a kid because I loved them both. And it was difficult to be in an environment where it was constantly felt this animosity towards the other parent.
When they were together and you were with them, did you have siblings around at that point?
I mean, I am one of two children from this union.
That relationship. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. My older brother lives on the West Coast.
I see. Okay. So you sort of, I don't know the dynamic there, but you kind of had someone to, help you deal with this on some level?
No, not really. I love my older brother, but we just didn't have that kind of a relationship. We didn't have any sort of sense of solidarity really in this situation.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. We had a great relationship when we were growing up, and we have a great relationship now, but it wasn't like that. It did feel a little bit like being adrift, and I've got really nothing negative to say about the situation, to be honest. It was not easy, but it was fine. You know, both parents treated me well and loved me, and that was good. But the thing that I have noticed is that an effect of this as well as other things in my life have had an effect on the way that I love, the way that I work in relationships. I was, in fact, just talking to my mother yesterday and telling her about how I thought that the acrimony in their breakup/divorce has instilled in me an incredible deep need to be on good terms with my exes. And I am. Yeah. And I am. You know, I mean, you realize Reg and I dated for a summer, you know, and it's like, and Reg remains my best friend. You know, it's like not best friend, but you know, we chat like once a week and stuff like this. We hang out all the time.
Back in November, you were still walking your ex's dog. Is that still happening?
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
No, he sent me a recipe yesterday. And then this morning I was telling him how good it was.
Do you feel like this whole, there's a sort of, I end up following things on Twitter, and during moments of collective crises, there's always someone who says, whatever you do, don't text your ex. And I know personally, it's taken me some time to get over, you know, past relationships. And that just says something about me, but I don't.
Well, didn't you, hold on, Vish, because didn't you, the last time we talked, you were telling me about this demon that you dated, this absolute terrible person who, I'm just kidding, I'm trying to.
No, I didn't say that, because it took about a decade, probably, but there was a reconciliation, and now there's a friendship. And
no, I remember you telling me that you had a good relationship with a big ex.
But
that there was a long period of distance.
That's right. We did. We talked about that outside of the transit, because you did reveal that, in your case, that relationship was and is, the ending of it, rather, is still relatively fresh, and that it's, what, within the last year or so, right?
Yeah, it was 8 years ago, or 8 years ago. It was 8 months ago, you know.
And
we did, and we have had some fallings out. We have had to take some space, but it's been a positive. It has been a hard breakup, but we're increasingly in a better space.
Like, everyone's circumstance in these dynamics is different, but I also feel like it seems weird to never speak to the person who, for a period, probably knew you better than you knew yourself, and better than most people will ever know you. And the way we tend to operate is like, we're done, it's done, it's over. I gather from your own experience, you're seeing that neither is considered particularly healthy, meaning to completely sever a relationship. That's what most people tend to think needs to be done. If you tend to stay in touch, people think it's weird, you know, just in terms of optics. People are like, why are you hanging out with your lover, ex-lover's dog? What are you doing? But on some level, maybe like me, see a bit of health in burying hatchets, not having grudge matches, having some residual affection still live. Is that fair?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not in touch with all of my exes, but the ones that I'm not in touch with, it's like, we have to get to a point where they're breaking the law before I'm just kind of like, oh, you're actually trying to hurt me. Well, now it is the moment that I'm going to actually resolve to never speak to you again.
Yeah.
But I think it's also a queer thing. I think because when I was in my early 20s, one of my best friends was this wonderful guitarist, songwriter named October Brown. Mm-hmm. And she was significantly older than me. I would have been 21 and she would have been 45. She's 65 now. But she was hugely responsible for helping me learn fingerstyle guitar. And it was wonderful because every day she would just be on the phone, sometimes for many hours, with her ex-girlfriend. She would just be on the phone, just catching up, talking. It was almost like they just had this constant relationship. It was almost like the relationship never ended. And Octi'd be dating new people, you know, but still just have these relationships. And I've reconnected with her after 20 years of kind of like just being distant friends. And it was wonderful to go over to her house, because she was still chatting with these same people. The person that she was dating when I was friends with her, they still were chatting.
Yeah.
The ex she had before then, she was still chatting. And I was like, I looked at this and I'm like, this is what I want. I want to just, these people know me so well. And I mean, you've met Patrick. Patrick was my manager, my boyfriend for 13 years.
Well, I accidentally texted Patrick when I thought I was texting you to set this all up.
Oh, great. I'm sure he loved that.
No, Patrick knows me. So when he probably didn't have my number in his phone. So when I said, oh, sorry, it's Vish. She like, you know, I think based on his text, who can tell from tone on text, but he's like, Vish, you know, he was minorly textually excited that it was me and not some random, you know, person from the 519 area code that he didn't know.
Yeah, if you had been Stuart Berman, he would have been like, ugh.
That seemed like an unnecessary pot shot, but I'm going to let it go. I'm going to abide by that and let it go. No, there's maybe we're, you know what we're getting at a little bit, Owen? I feel like sex complicates things for the other people in your orbit. All they think about when they see you with an ex is the fact that there was sex involved. But the two people are like, yeah, well, that was just one aspect of our dynamic. There were other emotional connections that maybe no one else would understand. I mean, wouldn't you agree? Like, I think it's that. That must be most of the stigma.
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge, huge thing. I was in a relationship once where there was an affair that was going on. And it had my blessing. I was like comfortable with it. Until I wasn't comfortable with it. And it's always that way when you're trying to be amenable to your partner's having, you know, side pieces or whatever you mm-hmm. want to call them. And I remember that there was just times when me and my then partner would try to be being intimate, and I would just find at really, really bad times just flashes of the thought of my partner and his lover together. Mm. And it would cripple me. It was really, really difficult. So I understand. It's like you can't really control how you feel about sex, you know? It's like it's one of my favorite expressions, and this doesn't just apply to intimate relationships but also friendships, is that you can't legislate desire, you know? Mm. It's like mm-hmm. You want so many times, it's just like you feel lonely. And I've done this. I've like felt sometimes I've just had a friend and we haven't been hanging out so much, and I email them and I'm like, I wish you'd call me more. I wish we'd hang out more. I miss you. And it's just like you can't actually send that email and expect that it's going to result in anything, because somebody has to want to hang out with you, you know?
Well, we're kind of skirting around ego and the play. Like, just, yeah, there's self-assertion. There's standing up for oneself. And within all of that, there's ego. So if you feel like you've been wronged or you're not being respected, it's not, I don't even mean ego in a negative way. I think we just need to assert our own agency in these relationships. And if your pride is hurt, that's a big one. Like, I know that about me. Like, the reason there was a long gap between communications in one of my relationships was because my pride was hurt. You know, I was prideful, mm-hmm. and then I got over it. And I don't, if I look at it objectively, that's growth. So when I want to engage with this person, I feel good because I feel like I've grown. Does that make sense? Am I saying this in a way that makes sense? Like, my being able to get over it feels positive as an emotional and personality thing for myself. Does that resonate with you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, also too, it's just like being reassured is like the best.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like I reconnected after 15 years of having not had any contact with her. A woman that I dated in first year mm-hmm. university. We dated for maybe about 3 or 4 months, and it was actually really nice, but we lived in different cities, and it just, you know, just kind of yeah. didn't go anywhere. And we didn't have any contact for 15 years. And then one day, just because we were both living in Montreal, you know, she just reached out and wanted to hang out. And there was a moment when we were having a cigarette outside the bar where we just kind of looked each other up and down appreciatively. like we both looked at each other like, you could still get it. And it was... It was the best feeling. It was just kind of like, wow, you know, I put on, you know, it's like she'd put on a little bit of weight. I'd lost some weight, like great me, both of us gray hair and wrinkles. And we just are kind of like, yep, we just, you still got it. And it was such a gratifying little moment.
Yeah, no, it's a lot about, yeah, these relationships are a lot about ourselves and how they make us feel about ourselves and what, you know, like all things, like the music you listen to kind of teaches you something about yourself. The music you like, I guess, can kind of teach you about who you are. I think the relationships you have obviously teach you a lot about who you are. And this was an interesting tangent because I was asking you about some lyrics that I found interesting. And
Are you going to make your guest, by the way?
No, I haven't got. No, I've been so distracted by our conversation. Hang on a second. Let me go back to. You said something in Paragon of Order has to do with a movie. Is that what you said?
Yeah, it's an explicit reference to a movie. There's no question what movie it is a reference to.
The Mainlander boy pays for the bath.
No.
Let you spend the night if you crash. Am I in the right verse?
You almost got to it. The line is Sister Faith and Sister Chance. It's from the Andre Lechowski movie Possession, starring Sam Neill and more Sam Neill. I can't believe I said Sam Neill first because, you know, Sam Neill is so outclassed in this movie by Isabella Gianni. Like, Isabella Gianni just gives the most committed performance of anyone's life in this movie. She is so inhabiting this woman going wild. And Sam Neill is just like, every time he's on the screen, you're just kind of like, oh, Sam Neill.
Let me read the whole verse for people who are, this is from the song Paragon of Order, which I believe is the second song with lyrics on the record, right?
It's track three.
Track three. In the hollow distance, a man tries to be kind. The Mainlander boy pays for the bath. They let you spend the night if you crash. And Radiator Drone, Sister Faith and Sister Chance, Children of Broken Homes, we will dance. There's more, but that is striking. And I didn't. Why did you want to make reference to this film in this particular lyric?
I just thought it was a nice. I mean, I've loved that movie, and at a certain point, I think the plot of Island was going to have some more parallels with Possession than in the end that it did. But I just love this image of Isabella Gianni saying, you know, Sister Faith, Sister Chance. Now you know what this verse is about, right? Like I'm kind of being pretty clear what is happening.
I think. No, you tell me. I don't want to get this wrong. I've already gotten it wrong once. What would you say it's about, per se?
It is about a homosexual union in a public bath.
Well, yes. I picked up on that. Yes, that's fair. Yeah.
Okay, good. I never know with you breeders.
No, I knew that the Mainlander boy pays for the... I knew that the Mainlander boy pays for the bath. I knew what that meant. But I didn't exactly understand the film allusion. Is that a scene from the film, or is that a conflation of your imagery and the film's imagery?
No, there's no homosexual unions in
okay.
In Possession. The unions that happen in Possession are far weirder. There's like an octopus, a giant octopus man.
A giant octopus man?
Oh, yeah. You know, you have to see this movie. It's really,
okay,
really crazy.
I haven't seen it. I'm not familiar with it. I will try to track it down. I appreciate the... I like tips. I like getting tips for books and films and music when I have guests on the show. It's a nice frill of having a conversation with someone who knows a lot of stuff.
Well, just a tip. Possession really is a good date movie. I would really advise you, if you have a night where the kids are away, to take the time to sit and watch it with your wife. I think it'll really, really do well for your relationship.
My kids are 8 and 5. They're not going anywhere. There's also a pandemic. We're all stuck together. I'll just, when they sleep, whenever that might be, maybe we'll turn it on. I think that's a good, I'll keep it in mind, and I appreciate that. I want to ask you a little bit about your own existential angst here.
Okay.
Because there's, in the song Transformer, there's a verse here I want to ask you about. When I wish I was never born, my mother tells me I wasn't born so much as excreted. But this emptiness is a gift. I'm free to write the future, an empty man, undefeated. That's a beautiful verse, first of all. And I enjoy the, as dark as it is on some level, my mother tells me I wasn't born so much as excreted, is a fascinating line. Is this drawn from your perception of reality or something that might have actually been conveyed to you?
My mother never said anything like this. And
it doesn't seem particularly motherly, if I might say.
No, my mom, like, I should go on the record in saying that, you know, my mom and I have an excellent relationship. And she's become she's becoming more and more comfortable over time with me singing about her in songs as if she's some kind of she-devil. but, and even then, I'm not actually singing about her. This is Lewis's mother.
That's right. Yeah, what is the relationship between Owen Pallett and Lewis again? I can't recall.
It's kind of a little bit ambiguous, and it also changes. So on the Heartland album, Owen is explicitly a songwriter violinist who is the deity of Spectrum, and has created this world in which Lewis inhabits. And Lewis, who is the creation of Owen, is a devoted acolyte of and a proselytizer, and goes about doing deeds in his name, in Owen's name, that is, and eventually starts to suspect that their relationship is a little more complicated, and starts to feel like there's like a kind of a voyeurism in Owen's usage of Lewis, and there's sexual implications and stuff like this, and Lewis kind of has a bit of a breakdown, and he rides his horse Imelda up Mount Alpentine. I really like fantasy worlds, and I think it's really important that you give things good names if you're going to do a fantasy record. So he climbs Mount Alpentine, and he stabs Owen in the eyes and kicks Owen off the cliff, and then urinates over the edge on Owen's corpse, and that's essentially how Heartland ends. So then in Ireland, Owen is absent. Owen's not a part of the narrative to begin with. And it's Lewis, now having murdered Owen, is now floating across the ocean and washes up on an island. And the bulk of the first two-thirds of the record are concerned with his kind of ruminations in this state of having had a life where that was so closely devoted to this single individual, whether or not it was devotion or murderousness, you know, it at least was, there was a relationship there, and now there is none. And, you know, the line in Paragon of Order that kind of encapsulates this is freedom and loneliness are one and the same, you know. So he engages in a cycle of hedonism. He's drinking, he's having a lot of sex, he's doing drugs and getting in fights. And eventually this spiral causes a nautical accident, which is described in A Bloody Morning. He ends up in jail. He calls out Owen's name. And then an unseen force comes and fucks him into space. I don't know if I'm allowed to say the word fuck on this podcast. But
you can say fuck, just don't say space.
Okay.
I have some trauma with that. For years, I was told that my name translated as Vishal is my full name. And I was told it meant great or big. That's what my parents raised me to believe. But I Googled it somewhat recently, and I found out that Google thinks it means spacious, and now I have real space issues.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't... No, you can say whatever you want. I believe, if I'm... correct me if I'm wrong. A Bloody Morning, by the way, is a wonderful... Well, it's a... It is a wonderful song, but it's also haunting, and it is one of the most compelling nautical songs I've heard, so well done there. But in Fire Mare, is that not the song where Owen is called upon? Owen, are you there in this nightmare I'm in?
That's correct. Yeah, no, it's on Fire Mare where he's singing from jail, and he's his escape essentially comes in the form of him getting fucked into space.
Right. Now, you say Lewis is an acolyte of Owen. Is Owen a father figure for Lewis?
No, he's the creator. He's a deity.
Creator, deity, father. What's the difference?
I don't... I don't know what kind of relationship you have with your father, but
well,
I don't see my father as a deity. My father,
okay, fine. He's not.
He's
but
some guy with a penis.
But you said, okay, well, creator though, fathers, creators. There's a bit. There's something going on there, isn't there?
I don't know.
Who is your creator if not your parents? Unless you're deeply religious and you think something else created you out of thin air. But I mean, your parents are your creators, are they not?
Yeah, I don't think of it as this way. Lewis and okay. Lewis and Owen are not a father son. Lewis is a work that is the creation of Owen. I'm not really investigating parental child relationships in this narrative. This is more about the relationship between an artist and their work.
Okay. Yeah, that's the dynamic of these records. That's fair. But yeah. As you alluded to earlier, we are in this strange metaphysical landscape where the creation has murdered its creator. And now, by this record, by Island, is seemingly lamenting that decision, that act. What do you suppose is going on with Lewis that he is now missing Owen and wondering where Owen is?
He's not really missing Owen.
Okay.
And he's not really lamenting it. He's more just kind of like contemplating it, you know? Like there's a verse in Perseverance of the Saints where he sings like, I left my friends and family pastured and boarded a ship to spread the news, which
yes.
is what happens in The Great Elsewhere.
Yeah.
And when I started to feel like I was living a lie, I climbed up the mountain to get my dues. And what he sings is nobody wanted him dead. You know, that's mm-hmm. that's what he's singing about.
Okay.
Now, of course, like, I mean, I don't, you know, I talk too much, you know, I mean, you've already heard.
This is a talk show. You have to talk a lot or it'd be really awkward.
No, when I say I talk too much, I tend to divulge a lot of information. And,
right.
You know, but there is obviously, you know, another thing that is going on here, which is the fact that there is no difference between Lewis's voice and my own songwriting voice, you know. And Lewis is, I try to kind of keep things a little loose, but Lewis and Owen are the same person, and it is the same voice. It's the voice that I have assumed while I'm making these records. You know what I'm
saying?
Fair
enough.
It's yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of complicated for me really to describe, but when Lewis is killing Owen, it's like a part of my creative impulse has killed off another part of my creative impulse. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. Mm-hmm. And I do feel like as much as I know that Lewis is something of an avatar for you or vice versa, if we really want to get a bit more puzzling about it, but there are lines here that knowing you the way I do, knowing of you what I know, that seem deeply personal. And for me, just knowing things I know about you and experiences you've had, they're kind of hard for me to... I feel a pain for you, if that makes sense. In Firemare, oh, I never learned how to hate. I never learned how to be hated. Can it be controlled? I know you've been struggling with things. I know you've been struggling with how you're perceived a little bit, or at least I think we all are. I mean, in this day and age, with social media, just the way it is, can you elaborate upon that, those lines? Because I just want to know where they were coming from on some level, and be as candid or not candid as you wish to be, obviously. But can you please? It hurts me to see those lines, read those lines, hear you sing them, because I relate to them, I think. And I wonder what your thoughts are on them.
Well, those lines, I mean, you could look at that and apply them to any number of autobiographical moments in my life, for sure. But it's really referring to a kind of an overarching thing that I'm interested in, which is the relationship between the creative impulse and mental illness. And when you go into therapy, and it depends on which kind of therapy that you're doing, but oftentimes one of the things that they really try and teach you is that other people's opinions don't matter. Like, it does not matter what other people think about you. And we go through our lives thinking so much about, like, do my parents love me? Do my friends, are my friends just pretending to like me? You know, is my lover going to leave me? Like, these are the concerns that we make. And a lot of the therapeutic exercises kind of like have this end goal towards absconding from the necessity of other people's opinion of you. And then we get to being a professional musician because other people's opinion of you doesn't just matter, but is how you pay your bills.
Yeah.
And it's not even just, is this music good? Because this is the thing about music, is that music is abstract. So music is the most abstract form of art next to dance, right? So what musicians have to deal with is that people love the work, but they relate to it not just in musical terms, but also to the person that is creating them. This is one of the reasons why we have pop stars. You know, it's like why we listen to music that is, oftentimes we're listening to music that is made by attractive young individuals as opposed to people who are phenomenally talented and have refined their craft. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
It's like there's all these different layers of likability and how music is digested and ways that you can approach the making of it. And so essentially what I'm trying to say is being a creative professional and especially a musician, it runs counter to what therapy would try to remove from you, which is that other people's opinions don't matter.
Let me just, if I may interject, because I, when I went to therapy, what I discovered was that a lot of my issues were about control and what I could and couldn't control. And I became a bit obsessed with those things, and they were impacting me in a way that I was obsessing over things that, I mean, in my case, it was life and death stuff. And it was a fear of losing someone to death. And what was conveyed to me is like, you can't control that. It happens to everyone. And I wonder if somewhere in what you're saying is a knot of things that you're saying there, but perception is something we can't control. Other people's perceptions, other people's thoughts about you. I mean, you can do your best to cast yourself in a good light or make work that you're proud of and do everything you can. But ultimately, once Owen, you release a record like Island, it's out of your control, isn't it? The way it's perceived, the way you're perceived, there's nothing you can do about it. And as a public figure of any kind, we all need to figure that out, don't we? Like, we all need to figure out that it doesn't really matter. You don't want to be some misanthrope that's not listening to people giving you, you know, positive feedback, if you will, but you also have to draw a line. Is that fair to say?
I mean, I'm of two minds about it. I think if you are going to be a creative professional or you're going to have any sort of visibility in the world, you are going to have to steel yourself for not being able to control people's opinions of you and their perceptions of you. But at the same time, I think that we are right now nearing, I would say that we're nearing a critical mass, but it just feels like asymptotic. Like, I feel like things are just getting more and more and more intense and worse and worse and worse. We're not having that breaking point. Things are just getting worse. And what I'm talking about is the way that people relate to individuals who have some level of visibility.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm talking about, you know, what happened with Alison Roman a couple of weeks ago. I don't know if you're aware of this, but she gave an interview where she said a very passing, disparaging comment about Chrissy Teigen.
Mm-hmm.
And she was roundly just had her star just fell. And it's sad.
I also thought Chrissy Teigen's star fell somehow.
That's the thing, is that all these people kind of, even though Chrissy Teigen was the target, people after piling on Alison Roman turned around and were just like, oh, and you know what? The world no longer has a need for Chrissy Teigen. Like, this is such a funny Twitter thing to me that I kind of almost want to just say it about anyone. Like, even the people who are totally not canceled. Like, the world just no longer has a need for Joanna Newsom. You know, the world just no longer has a need for Baha'ism, like, you know, just ridiculous things. Like, I mean, it's,
okay.
It's
okay.
Just
nope.
Seems
we have taken some fascinating tangents in discussing Island, but I feel like they were all sparked by our discussion of Island on some level. There are things swimming around here that I am still trying to figure out, so to speak, and I've been wrong. The creator of the album has told me I've been wrong about a couple of things, and I'm going to live with that and ponder those things. I want to say that it's a beautiful expression. Thank you for these lyrics. We didn't really even talk about on a soundscape level and a musical level. You say you're proud of this completely. Do you feel like this is a leap up for you musically in any particular way?
I think it was a bit of a production jump. I think that I just really did a good job on the production. I think I'm really happy with the fact that I just really relaxed and let sounds just kind of unspool. I wasn't just trying to fill the record with content. There's a lot of space, which I'm really proud of and happy with. I feel like I've really refined my songwriting language in terms of how I make my melodies and chords relate to each other. I saw a very gratifying tweet, actually, the day the record came out, where somebody said that I was a master of tertiary harmony. And I'm just kind of like, oh, somebody gets it. Like, because it is true. It's like I am spending a lot of time on the harmonic architecture of like what I'm doing here. So it is, and I think people who, you know, have a background in music theory might be able to hear that and be like, oh, this is what he's doing. But, you know, I hope that it's just kind of conveyed as just this otherworldliness to people who don't have that background, you know?
Yeah, no, I don't have that background per se, but I pick up on something magical going on. And on some level, I do have a background in that. Fine, I'm going to just own that right now. What about these four? Is it four? There's four. I don't want to call them incidental or interstitial pieces, but what are these four wordless pieces here?
They're actually incidental interstitial pieces.
Okay, see, I know what I'm talking about. Great.
It's interesting because when the record came out, people were thinking of them as markers for movements, and that's wrong. They're not.
Okay.
And when I saw it, when I saw the track listing appear in Island, I kind of blinked because I realized, oh, of course, people think that's the case, but it's not.
They are numbered. Maybe that's, and they seem to be little divisions.
Oh yeah, they're divisions, but they're only numbered because they, you know, you have to separate them. They're all nameless, and I put them all over my records, just little.
Yeah,
I call them arrow songs. It's just like I put little arrow songs all over my records, just because I think it's nice. I think it's fun to kind of have, like, if you're playing them on CD, it's nice to just have these little things. And
yeah,
you know, I mean, a lot of electronic musicians do this. They'll just have like a little 20-second track, you know, and it's fun. So
it's cool. There's a lot of mystery within this record as well. Owen, what are you gonna do? Normally you would put out a record like this. By the way, this record kind of come out all of a sudden, you know, like, I know we talked about how it had been done for 2 years, but I feel like it just appeared in the midst of this pandemic, and I presume you can't tour. What are you doing, so to speak, beyond talking to people like me? What are you gonna do to, you know, get the word out about this thing?
I've made some videos, like music videos. One of them is out already, Bloody Morning, and we've got another couple that are coming out soon. And I'm making little Instagram videos of just live performances and stuff like that.
Those are cool. That you're doing those in your living room?
Yeah, I'm not really trying to monetize my this aspect of my music career in any way, just because it seems like a daunting task. Like, I'm not going to sell tickets to a virtual show or anything, which it just seems kind of daunting to me.
Yeah.
And added to this is just like, I'm seeking other avenues of employment currently.
Okay.
Chiefly welfare. I'm just kidding. No, I'm pick up arrangement work and film scoring work and stuff like that. And stuff has been coming in. There's a video, I just did an arrangement for Christine and the Queens.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And she, sang People I've Been Sad on a French TV on a long running, primetime show. And, it was really great. I've been getting kind of stuff like that. So I don't really know how the record's going to come out aside from me just kind of like, making these videos, keep my Instagram updated. I don't know how, but I just hope that people will gravitate towards it and eventually just kind of realize it for being, you know, a pretty good record. And so far, the response has been really good. I've received messages from certain musicians whose opinions I really respect and who have been really, really pleased with it. And that's been kind of gratifying.
Can you name drop three of them?
I got an email this morning from Arca, which was really nice.
Nice.
I'm a huge fan of her work. That's the first one that comes to mind.
That's one. You have two more. I don't know why I'm being such an ass. Hey, John Darnielle's mentioned in the thank yous here. You do some work with the Mountain Goats. Did John help you with this?
No. John was a little more of inspiration on In Conflict than on this one.
I see. Okay.
However, there is one decision that was made. John did have a large part in one major decision on this record, and that is the opening track.
Hmm.
Because that was a demo of a piano demo that was originally going to be turned into something more lush, more orchestral. But I sent the demo version of the record, which was all sequenced, like all the songs were there and the instrumentals were there, but only just played on piano and guitar, simplified.
Okay.
And John, when he put on the record and heard the piano demo, he texted me right away, "This is exactly what I need to be hearing right now."
Oh,
and
nice.
Having him text me that made me think, okay, I'm going to keep the demo version of the first interstitial track as being the way this record opens. And I think it's, you know, I've read some people complain that the album takes a while to get going. And I'm just like, that's just what you're used to. Like, you know, it's like, yeah. This is, what a wonderful, valuable experience to have a record that just begins with 13 gorgeous chords spiraling out over 3 minutes. Like, I mean, you're not going to get another record that begins like that.
No, it's a towering achievement. I want to congratulate you on Island, Owen, and I'm on a personal note, I'm happy to hear you sounding so strong and in the midst of all the madness, trying to do good work. It means a lot to those of us who follow you.
Thanks. I thought you were going to say, to those of us who aren't doing anything at all.
Well, yes, you are curing some boredom by doing things, so that helps as well. Has this record been pressed to vinyl, or is it? Where can people go to learn more about it?
It's in progress. Record pressing plants kind of had a moment of being shut down. Some of them are reopening. Some of them have reopened.
Okay.
That's happening.
Okay, where would you say it's out on Domino Records in where is it? Is it Domino Worldwide or
we released through Secret City.
Oh, right, of course.
In Canada, out of Montreal, a really great label. So it's a co-partnership with Secret City and Domino.
Okay, so people can go to Secret City's site or Domino's site. Do you want people to follow you on anything in particular or keep track of you? Your comings and goings on the social media?
I've set aside my Twitter account because it seems like more of a place for public debate rather than selling albums, and I'm more interested in selling albums than public debate.
Mm-hmm.
It's
too bad. You're good at public debate.
Yeah, I just felt as if it wasn't filling my pockets with much needed money.
Sure.
Nor was it increasing my kind of like artistic, it wasn't increasing my artistic worth. It was kind of a bit of an ego trip to just kind of go online and, you know, wow everyone with an erudite opinion. It's just like, you know, and a part of me, I was like, this is not activism was my actual feeling. I was like, this is just narcissism masquerading as activism.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I feel about a lot of Twitter. It's like, this is narcissism and harassment masquerading as activism. So I kind of don't post on that anymore. But yeah, if people want to follow me on Instagram, I usually kind of post videos of performances of songs and stuff like that and photos of my dog.
Right. Well, that's okay. That's great. And it's He Posts Clouds. Is that right?
Yeah, He Posts Clouds.
Okay, great. Oh, and if there's a song from Island that we can go out on, would you mind picking one for us?
Sure, Polar Vortex.
Polar Vortex. Why did you pick this particular song?
This is, you know, 3.5 minutes long. It'll just get in, get out. Nobody will get bored.
Okay. All right, fine. We'll let people decipher what it might be. Do you want to say anything about it in particular, actually?
I mean, all I really have to say about it is stuff that's on the Apple Music interview that I did with the aforementioned Stuart Berman. Curse his name. Stuart interviewed me to create some album notes for Apple Music. And yeah, this song is just a kind of investigation of different sources of anxiety that you know I loosely just kind of refer to as madnesses in this song. And,
yeah, madness is a man among us. A man. I feel like there's men representing different feelings and emotions and things on this record. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, men are interesting. Men are very interesting.
I would agree. I don't know if interesting is, I kind of don't like most of them, but that's a...
Oh, I didn't say I liked them either.
They're interesting. Okay.
Yeah, no, I'm interested. I'm interested in men, the concept of masculinity, and, you know, I'm less interested these days, but you know, I'm actually, I was just talking to Maggie McDonald the other day about how, as these Spectrum albums go on, I am planning on shifting the focus away from Lewis and onto other characters so that, you know, we're not just, it's not just such a sausage party all the time.
Right. Okay. That's good to hear. Although if you're going to have a character on an album, why not name them Vish? Just every once in a while, Vish pops up, does something.
Vish is perhaps the least singable name I could imagine.
That's the worst thing I've ever heard.
I knew you would say that, and I'm sorry. Vishal,
very sad.
Vishal is nice. I could say.
Yeah, Vishal, you could. Vishal would be good. Okay, I've planted a seed, a very egocentric seed, and sorry for imposing myself into your world. This is Polar Vortex by Owen Pallett from his beautiful and excellent new album, Island. Owen, thank you so much for being back on this show and for your time. I appreciate
it. It's my pleasure.
You.
My pleasure. Very nice. Yeah. But hold on, before you go, is there a word? Can you think of a rhyme for Vish? Like, how would you rhyme Vish? I can't think of one. Quiche. There you go.
I introduced a band once at Hillside by doing a freestyle rhyme. And if I remember correctly, it was very simple, but it was, listen up, everybody. My name is Vish. Rhyme so wild, I need a leash. Known to enjoy a slice of quiche.
Ah.
If you understand, then say capiche.
Wow. Okay. So I got. I mean, you've got three different languages there. You know.
It's true. It's true.
You had to. Four. If you count, you know, this your name, which apparently means spacious.
Spacious.
Yeah. Spacious.
Vish, you should write a song called Vishal Gets Fucked Into Spacious. No, that doesn't make any sense. I tried to do something there, and it didn't. It's dirty. It sounded dirty, too. I didn't like it. This is Polar Vortex by Owen Pallett. Owen, best of luck with everything, and thanks again for the time.
Thank you, Vish.
If I wake before the sun rises, I remember stories told to me by my mother's voice. As the sky, it turned from blue to gold. She told me of the day she learned that madness is a man. Oh, 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 madness is a man among us. Oh, 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 and she let the madness in. Any other man, I have a code and hold my friends to higher standards. But out on Ellen's Key, a new crop of kids every year with louder voices. While trying to reach them is like sewing up a geyser, 'cause madness is a man. sadness is a man among us. Oh, they will let the madness in. Present. Your job, your house, your family turn to dust in an instant. And a single word from your lover's voice says madness is a man. Oh, madness is a man among us. You will let the madness in.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Very special thanks to Owen Pallett for returning to this show. Oh, this one in particular is the 545th episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and is available on all Apple and Google platforms and other things as well. If you can't find an episode that you're looking for, or if you want to learn more about me and sign up for my semi-regularly scheduled newsletter, please visit my website, vishkana.com. You can like Creative Control on Facebook or follow the show on Twitter at Vish Creative, or follow me directly at Vish Khanna. Also, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to keep this podcast going. All people who donate $6 or more gain themselves exclusive access to audio content that is otherwise not available via the Creative Control podcast stream. Most recently, as I'm speaking to you, a 2011 conversation of sorts between myself, I guess it's conversations, between myself and every member of Fugazi when they appeared on the penultimate episode of my old campus community college radio show, the Mish Fish Interracial Morning Show. We put the show on indefinite hiatus because we were about to have a child, my wife and I. And so I thought, who better to tell me what an indefinite hiatus might be like, and also what it might be like to be a parent, than each member of Fugazi. So it's kind of a fun episode. Again, you can learn more about it and other episodes in that series of exclusive content at patreon.com/creativecontrol. Do you like Sufjan Stevens? A pretty long chat from, I don't know what year it was, 2010 maybe? Me and Sufjan Stevens had a long chat. You can hear that. Anyway, patreon.com/creativecontrol. Thanks again to liveatmasseyhall.com, where you can watch beautifully captured concerts at that amazing old building, all by great Canadian artists. Again, liveatmasseyhall.com. Thanks to Pete's Trocadero, The Bookshelf, Planet Bean Coffee, and Granddad's Donuts for their in-kind support for this show. Thanks to my friend Jim Guthrie for letting me use some music on the show. You can learn more about Jim at jimguthrie.org. And finally, thank you very much for listening to this episode featuring myself, and Owen, and check out other episodes. Subscribe to the podcast if you have a subscribe button, or follow it, and you'll be up to date. And tell your friends to do the same, because otherwise, what's the point? You got to talk about this with your friends, don't you? I don't even know if you have to do that. Anyway, thank you. I will talk to you very soon. Bye for now.
Catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.